Do you crave deep and meaningful conversations? The kind of conversations that jazz you up, stretch your mind, and leave you wanting more? Welcome to Suzanne Says, Courageous Conversations about Life and Living. I'm your host, Suzanne Bird Harris, and I talk with friends and colleagues about what lights them up, their fears and flaws, who they've been, who they are, and who they're becoming. You know, the stuff that makes and breaks us. So get comfy. Here we go. Hello, Brooke Packard. How are you today?
I am feeling great. How are you doing today?
I'm really happy to be getting to talk to you, that's for sure. I have a question that I have started each of these episodes with so far, and given that you've told me you've listened to many of them, I bet you know what's coming.
I do, but I decided not to prepare. Okay. I decided to be in the moment.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Okay, so my first question for you, my dear, is, without mentioning what you do for other people, who are you, Brooke Packard?
I would say I'm like the fool stepping off onto a journey to see where we're going to go. I am constantly learning. Learning jazzes me and it actually kind of regulates me.
Yeah.
In fact, if I think of all the things I do that I need for regulation, it's the fool. I walk, I learn, and I love my solitude, and that's where I get my ideas and my strength.
You and so. I are very much birds of a feather in all of that, my friend. My goodness. So, yeah, we have an awful lot in common. Tell me about, for the people who are, alone, oh, no, I avoid that at all costs. Yeah. How much of your 24 hours in a day would you say, on average, you spend by yourself?
Oh, that's a really good question. If you knock sleep out of the picture, that's 7-8 hours. That's, that's alone. Mm-hmm. That's the ultimate alone. So I would say about 3 to 4 hours a day.
Mm. Do you feel like that's enough or do you want more?
I want more. Yeah. But the sweetest time for me is I know my best time is early morning. So I make a point of getting up early. And I did this when my kid was home. It's just like, this is the time. This is the only time that no one's going to touch, and that's when I sit alone and do my, deep soul writing and my meditation and prayers and see what the day avails itself of.
Mm. I am very much not like you in that.
I know.
I am, although I suspect we both, because early morning, especially this time of year, is dark outside. I imagine it's dark when you're talking about that. My dark is before I sleep. I'm a night owl. And I appreciate an early morning, 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, and how everything, before sunrise. And I like that time of day. It's just my internal clock is not wound to have me awake at that time very, very often, but night owl, late at night, between probably the hours of 10 and 2 at night.
Yeah,
that's probably my best, most creative. It's certainly the best time for me to be writing, especially if I'm creative writing, not technical writing. But again, that time window impedes on my day if I give into it too often. So I usually reserve that for Friday and Saturday nights, when I don't have to.
Oh, that's
be up with the rest of the world because the schedule of, I don't have kids at home in school anymore, but between working outside the home in a job and that, and my kids are 6 years apart in age, there's three of them. So I had 18 years of
you know, 18 years of a teenager in my house. That wasn't good planning, but I have adapted over the years to be a daytime person. But it is not my natural state at all.
Yeah, I hear you on that. And I think we all adjust. I mean, I wish we all had the freedom to find our special time and sweet spot. I grew up in a family that was very judgmental of morning risers and hard work and all that kind of stuff. And for a while I worked in a piano bar in the Greenwich Village. I was bartending and singing and just, it was great. And the bar closed at 4:30 in the morning and we had to close it up. And Ginger, the owner, just said, "You're staying open to the last possible minute." And so I would get home. I would go to sleep from 6 to 1, uh-huh. right? And I can remember my mother would call me at 10 and go like, "Why aren't you, you're still in bed?" And I'm like, "Oh, let me be," you know.
Oh, Lordy, that was before the days of cell phones, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
God bless those things, though, because you can turn them off.
Yes, you can. You can do that do not notify button.
Yeah. Well, is that on an iPhone?
It's on a Droid.
Oh, really? That's what I like. Oh, I don't. I'm nobody's expert on a phone, that's for sure. It does bring up a question in the moment of, and I might have to let it come back to me. Something came across my head when you were talking about in the bar. Oh, well, I'm not ready for prime time today, Brooke. How about that?
We can just go with the flow, Suzanne. You know, it's you at 20% is most people at 95%. So what?
God bless you all when I'm anything over 20 then. Ooh. Yeah, that does explain some of the expressions on people's faces I've seen in the course of my life, though. So that's all good. Part of my purpose, shock and awe.
Yeah, no, I think disruption is part of my purpose, too. Yeah. I got to say, it's like, I see that snake, I got to poke it with a stick.
Yeah.
You know, something not good, something not right, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, that is true about you in my experience of you. You are one of the people in my world that I can depend on to be like, you get kind of Norma Rae about some of them, which I love. I love that intensity of and that passion of purpose and stuff. And I know you've done 100, I mean, you're talking about bartending in Greenwich Village. You've done a bunch of things in the course of breathing in this life. So
yeah, I sure have.
Give me a rundown of all the many jobs of Brooke over the years. I want to hear this variety.
Let's see. Do we really want to go into server jobs? I don't know. Yeah. Server, cater waiter. That's a trip. Back in the glory days of the 90s, that was crazy. I've been a nursery school teacher. My first job that wasn't babysitting or nannying or painting, you know, painting houses and stuff, was as a Fuller brush salesperson.
I love it.
And I was really good at it, but I hated it. I ended up quitting because it was just like, I don't want you people to buy this stuff. It's like, you don't need it.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, you just need one product and it cleans everything. So although they make a really good nail brush, I still swear by their nail brush. So that I had a job managing a very small boutique when I was 17, 18 in our town. And I've got some crazy stories with that. I worked as a bookkeeper for Associated Dry Goods, which owned Lord & Taylor's and J.W. Robinson's. I handed out leaflets on the street for a gym. It was totally legit. Mm-hmm. But I think one of my favorite weird jobs was I worked at the Museum of Broadcasting and I got paid to watch TV.
Oh, and that's a dream job for some people. Oh my goodness.
It really was. The pay was awful. There were quotas. It was nuts, but it was just, it was like all those Friday and Saturday nights babysitting and watching TV paid off big time. You know, I could identify every character actor and all that kind of stuff. So that was a cool job. I was an editor. My college job was editing music instruction books for the company that published the books I learned to teach myself to play guitar. Mm-hmm. And that was cool because that was one thing I did was I took my babysitting money and bought my first guitar. And then I would play out in church basements because you could make $25 a night. That was a big deal.
You know, I did the same thing in high school. I bought a guitar, taught myself how to play it, and played at church. Our church did the little children's sermon and then exited the children off to the nursery for the sermon. And when they found out that I could play guitar, they had me come up after the little children's sermon and sing a Sunday school song with the kids before they went off. And of course the congregation joined. Look at us. We have so much in common.
I had no idea we shared that. Cause that was another thing I did, you know, early childhood music specialist and working in church. And I led a band in a couple of different churches in the '90s. And yeah, it's been fun. I've been paid to be in shows, you know, and that just sort of happened, you know,
where on Broadway.
Off Broadway and regional theater. I was working at we recorded two kids' albums. We never made our money back, but it was really great. I worked with amazing people I did a kids' concert and pulled out a bass I hadn't played in years. And someone said, "There's an off-Broadway show looking for someone who can," and I had no desire to be on stage at that point. It's like, I'm over it. Someone came up to me after the concert and they said, "Oh, go on this audition." And there it was. So for a couple of years I did regional theater, but people would call and go like, "Hey, do you play, you know, can you play piano?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I can figure it out."
I love it. You know, all of you out there who've taken piano lessons and considered it difficult, please don't be offended by that last statement she just made. Yeah, I'll figure it out. It is not easy to play the piano. So,
no, it's not. And I ran away from it as a kid because the teachers just didn't understand. You know, we're in such a new place when it comes to teaching mm-hmm. instruments that it's really wonderful. But I was of the generation where it was like, "Hey, you know, I'd really like to learn about chord changes and play a Beatles song," and be like, "No, you must play Chopin and you must
learn your scales first. Then you can play music."
Yeah. But you have to wait scales for 5 years. So yeah, no, it is genuine artistry. I didn't mean to.
I get that.
Yeah, the gig was like, you know, like boom chick chords in the back of a country band thing. That was, you know, that was what it is.
So are you doing what you want to do in your life now?
That's a really good question. In my prayers, I pray for many things. I also pray for my heart's desire. And I don't know what my heart's desire is. In fact, I was just looking at the confession in the old Episcopal Church, which says, you know, we're sorry because we've followed too much the devices and desires of our own hearts. And I'm like, you know, the world would be like a better place if we followed the devices and desires of our own hearts and not what someone else has imposed on it. So I would say, you know, I'm in a wonderful relationship, and by wonderful, I mean, it's not all clouds, pink clouds and pussycats. I have an adult child who is fantastic. I get to create and write and, even sing again. I had sort of lost the love for a couple of years mm-hmm. and now it's coming back. And yeah, I feel as if there's kind of a new purpose and also more things to be revealed. Yeah. You know, it's part of that fool stepping off into nowhere. Let's see.
You and I share that, you know, curious bent about life. And both of us are full of wild, crazy stories of the result of following our curiosity. And sometimes, in my case, I'll speak for myself, sometimes not always checking out where I'm stepping before I step as a result of that. But
oh yeah,
but that's where the adventure comes from. And yeah, I can't imagine not being like that, actually.
Yeah, I can't either. I and that's one thing I really, one of the many things I appreciate about you is that you're just open. You're not, you know, I remember years ago it's describing someone and I said, you know, the door, the pathway to their door of yes is all grown over. You know, it's like they don't know. And I will say yes too often and I'm learning to be like, no, boundary time, boundary bill. But you know, we don't really get, we don't avail ourselves to what's out there if we keep saying no because this is the way it should
Amen.
Be.
Amen.
You know?
Amen to that. And much of what I really love about my life now is a result of having said yes when everybody else was going, you sure about that? You know?
Yeah.
That which doesn't kill us and all that too is a part of it. But tell the folks at home what you do now.
Well, one of the things I do is I've created a system called Sleepy Time Club, and it gives parents and caregivers of kids, not just parents, a nurturing bedtime routine in 20 minutes or less. Because that, I believe bedtime is the first best habit. We can go into that later, but it's just at the time of the day when you're most vulnerable to decision mm-hmm. overwhelm. This site gives you a journey within the ritual of bedtime. So you're not like, you know, it's just like, what book do we read? So within each bed, there are four bedtime kits and a bedtime journal, and they all have recordings. And like I said, it's a journey to sleep within the ritual of bedtime.
I'll tell you what, if I was master and commander of the universe, I'd have met you at this place. But me way back then when I was starting to have kids, because boy, I was a single mom most of my mothering years, and bedtime with three kids 6 years apart in age was a circus at best. And they're all three wired differently where bedtime is concerned. Like, I remember my oldest son when he was two or three, he was like me. I was the last person asleep in my house and the first person awake. I slept 4 or 5 hours. So, you know, my mom spent the 60s and 70s like, because of lack of sleep. I remember having, you know, the baby gates you can buy to put in the doorway. I had to buy two and stack them because Joe would get out of his crib and climb over that baby gate. And one morning I woke up at like 4 o'clock in the morning to every light in the apartment on, water running from every faucet. And I'm like, what? And I'm all disoriented and half awake, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, what in the hell is going on here? And I got up and the first place I went to was the bathroom, and the tub was running, the sink was running, but he was nowhere to be found. The two gates were in his doorway.
Whoa.
And I found him in the kitchen in his little blue fleece footed pajama, zip up the front jammies, you know, neck to toes covered.
Yeah.
Navy blue, while I was watching turning a mint green. Why? Because he had the dishwasher door open, had climbed up onto that and on the top rack and then up to the counter, got the dishwasher detergent gel and proceeded to empty almost a full bottle of that stuff all over the kitchen floor, himself, the dishwasher door. I was like, and he's my oldest, you know, so in many ways, man. He desensitized me to a lot of the stuff about motherhood. I'm like, if I survive this one, I'm golden. He was really hard to contain at night. He too required very little sleep and had energy. Still to this day, doesn't sleep much. At 34, it's becoming a problem for him, and he's working on solutions for that. But bedtime, the whole, because, you know, I was single mom, worked all day in an office, come home. I've got, 2 or 3 hours to get dinner, homework, baths, and bedtime accomplished. And like so many moms, I was just living for 9 o'clock, because at that point, all of that would be behind me. My day, I could actually exhale, sit down and say, okay, another one in the books. Yay.
Yeah, really.
With him, especially those years when he was young, 9 o'clock would come and go many nights in a row. And Sleepy Time Club, you know, I'm very familiar with it. And I love it. I love all the graphics and the music and all of the things that you've incorporated into it. And I just sit here and I think, I'd have given my eye teeth for Sleepy Time Bedtime Kit in 1987, 88, 89, all the way to now.
Well, it would have been a CD, and then you would have downloaded. But I mean, the other thing about, you know, my kid, I set up like a beautiful, because I just thought at the end of the day, I have ADD, my kid is ADD, now we're all diagnosed, and ADD doesn't always present with the H, particularly in women, thank you very much. But I just knew, like, if I could just have that 15 to 30 minutes together at the end of the day, whether my child fell asleep or not, I like feel like I did the right, really I did the right thing.
Because that is probably one of the top three things I would do differently if I could rewind with what I know now and redo those years. There were too many nights where the battle was raging and we all went to bed mad and tired. And when you go to bed that way, you're, you know, pre-setting your day the next day. If you, you know, can't get your resting heart rate down, you know.
Well, and the other thing about it is like after, like my kid did not nap. They gave up naps like, right. And I literally cried when they gave up naps completely. Cause that was, as I was a single mom too, for the first 5 years of their life. But, you know, so like I said, you could at least have that moment, but, and I also did not have, it was great as a single mom in a small apartment. I didn't have any sleep problems. They were just in the room with me. You know, I didn't have this popping up and down. So don't kill me, moms, you know, but that's the way it was. But after that baby training thing, sleep and bedtime becomes like parenting's dirty little secret. People don't want to talk about it. You know, they don't want to say like they failed. Yeah. And it doesn't. And there should be a safe space to say, damn, this is hard. You know, like I was having I had an internet exchange with someone who's on my list and in my peeps in my community. And she reached out to me and said, I asked them to put away their toys and I asked them to do this and I asked them to do that. And they hate bedtime. And I'm like, well, no wonder, you know, like give it up. Like I heard, what was it? There was a bishop in New York, Paul Moore, who had 8 children. And at his funeral, he was very good friends with Dorothy Day, the woman who was an activist down in the village and fed people and all this kind of stuff. And Bishop Moore's wife went to Dorothy Day and said, "Oh, I don't, these kids aren't doing this and all this kind of stuff." And Dorothy Day said, "Lower your standards," you know, like, that's like it. And it's hard for people to do now, particularly with social media. You know,
I'm very grateful social media was not a part of my child rearing years.
Yeah.
Oh my Lord. I mean, it's bad enough. Lexi in middle school is when social media started being a thing in our world here. And she has a very different experience of those years than I did because of social media. And some of it is good. And a lot of it is not. And
yeah, it's like a huge experiment that's being run on a couple of generations now.
Well, she didn't get a phone of her own until she was after 13. I held out that long, managed to. The boys, because of their age disparity, they were already up and out. I couldn't imagine. I see others with young children now, and they have... There's such a wide variance in who lets their kids have phones. And there are good reasons to let an 8-year-old have a phone with actual service on it. There are good reasons in this world that we live in today to have that in place. But my personal opinion is they've got to be strictly monitored, because the freedom through that little screen to get exposed to God knows what, and you have no idea what they're seeing and where they're going. You know, you could, that's just way too much stuff.
Right. And even if it's not the bad guys, you know, it's just, there our kids are being marketed to. They're not allowed to have a childhood that comes from the inside out and to discover who they
are. Things like, you know, have a bad day at school, somebody's picking on you. When I had that, I could go home and it stopped. It doesn't stop for them now. And
yeah,
you know, I remember so many of those nights in those years with the kids little that, you know, I'd, on the drive home from work, I'm like, okay, we're going to have a great evening. We're going to, you know, we'll get dinner done. I'm making something everybody will eat. So when there and, you know, we'll have bedtime. I'll read a story. But the thing I found was that I was so depleted myself by that time of day that the best of intentions weren't cutting it, because all it took for me to lose it was one little thing on their part. And I was like,
yeah.
I remember so very clearly thinking, oh my, I'd just give my ITs for you to just lay down and shut up. Just stop talking to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's horrible to say out loud even now. It makes me feel prickly that I ever felt that or thought that. But Lord have mercy, there were years there that was on a loop in my head. Just, I remember telling Joe when he was like 5 or 6, son, stop, be quiet for 5 minutes. My ears hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. I relate totally, because I have a chatter child. And somehow we figured out a way to gamify it and also do stuff like, I remember when they, for their second birthday, I got them a drum. It was a kid's Remo drum. It was a Tubana. It was like this big thing. And people were like, oh, you're going to regret that. It's going to be noise all the time. And I'm like, oh no, if I stop hearing the drum, I know they're in trouble. If the drum is going, it's quite a pleasant sound, and I'm cool by myself, and they're cool by themselves, you know? So there's ways, you know, just give me an idea of like perhaps something to give people, which is like, here's some, it's safe to have low supervision, independent activities.
Making available things they can do on their own and that spark their imagination. I think that's another thing that our kids don't have as good as we had, is the opportunity, be it, and you might have heard us whining and crying when we were little, oh, there's nothing to do. But right. That is what got our imaginations going, sometimes to our own detriment. But still, you know, I look at young little ones now, like 5 and 6 year olds now, and too many of them, and I'm having one of those moments. Oh my God, I know I'm old now because what's about to come out of my mouth. They've got a device in their hand. Like they don't see the world they're in. They only see the world in that screen. And I'm like, look up, people. Look up.
Yeah. And parents, put it down, man.
And I, you know,
put it down. Don't model it. No, I mean,
you need 10 minutes to think straight, hand a kid a tablet and with a game on it.
Yeah.
And you've got your 10 minutes. Yay.
Yeah. There are alternatives. We just need to give everyone a bunch of alternatives so we can all plan together. I mean, one of my pet peeves, and I'm going to sound curmudgeonly and old, and like an old with this, is playdates. Like I never heard the term playdates until I was teaching at this fancy New York private nursery school. And it was just like, oh, I have a playdate. I have a playdate. And I was like, okay, well, so I guess this makes sense if you're in the city and you want the kids and you're working and you want the kids to get together. But when we moved to the suburbs, and I remember my kid, there are now probably several generations of kids who have never learned what it's like to play with someone who wasn't handpicked for them or that they didn't handpick. And I remember my kid would say, there's one day when she said, can I have a play date? Can you organize a play date for me? And I said, there's kids around the block. Just go out and play with them. And they went, oh, well, there's no one I really like best. And I said, well, figure out how to play with them. Figure that out. If it's Kenny, the nose picker, find something you can do with Kenny, you know?
So back to sleep. I find it interesting. I've always, ever since I met you, I have been fascinated by your perspective and your love of trying to help people not only get better sleep, but have a nurturing, connective moment with their kids in the melee of the day, how to wind down a day, no matter what happened through the day, it's still salvageable in the evening there with that. And having a sleepy time bedtime kit is really tactile. It, you know, done right, it could be something that the kid really looks forward to, you know, like bedtime becomes not feeling like a punishment, because I know for sure my kids felt that on occasion of just go to bed because, and their interpretation was, I didn't want to be with them anymore. I'm just done with you people, you know?
Oh yeah.
Truth of it. Yes, I was done with them at that moment, but I don't want that to be what they take away from their childhood, you know? And so the bedtime kits are great for that. But as an adult, even this past Christmas, Joe and his wife got me a Fitbit, and I wanted it not to track my steps or monitor weight loss or any of that nonsense. God knows I'm not using it to see how much water I'm drinking in a day, unless you count coffee, which you don't. So, but I wanted it to monitor my sleep. Because I knew that if I could work toward better quality sleep, it would have a ripple effect on everything else. And I have found that to be true. I have learned so much about what it takes for me to get a good night's sleep and be ready for the day the next day, just through what I've learned watching my statistics, my resting heart rate. And now I can wake up in the morning, not even have to look at the app to see what my sleep score is. I can predict it by how I feel when I wake up.
That's great. that's when things really click, is when you get that mm-hmm. intrinsic, you know, when the reward is mm-hmm. intrinsic. We have that intrinsic thing. And I discovered the power of a bedtime ritual to cure my insomnia, which was chronic. It was terrifying. You know, that feeling like, you know, the whole day is going to be ruined. And then the next day after that's going to be ruined and all that kind of stuff. And this bedtime is under our control. It's in our power. And I'm, because I have ADD, and you share this too, we often like MacGyver our way yeah. into habits and routines and figure out, you know, the best way to manage something, because we're not good at all that stuff that, you know, it's a superpower, but it's also a curse. So, you know, for instance, when it comes to bedtime routine and tracking water, one of the great tips for adults is you take an evening routine and reverse it in the morning. So I wanted to increase my hydration. I've been doing this for years. I have some glass iced mm-hmm. tea bottles, and it totals 64 ounces. So it's, you know, 4 16-ounce glass bottles. At night, I fill them up. And in the morning, I get out of bed and I drink one, because that replaces the dehydration. At the end of the day, when they're empty, I've drunk my water. So that's my
charm. You know, two things I have to say, that maybe three. One, one is our friend Marty Marsh, who I just talked to on here. His tip for me years ago was, first thing, before you even get out of bed, if you have to, drink a 16-ounce bottle of water. Give back yep. to your body what you're about to go put in the sewer. <You know>? And if you have to first go put it in the sewer and then replace it, go ahead. Because I often, my bladder is my alarm clock. And it wakes me up, and it's like, there is no such thing as putting one drop of liquid in this system until I go handle that. But it makes a lot of sense. And I also know that when I do that, I feel better throughout the day. I still suck yeah. at getting enough water in me. Liquid's not a problem. But straight up water, very difficult. The second thing is your filling up of the four bottles in the evening to set yourself up for the next day so that you have it right there and there's no excuse not to drink it. If you fill them up and you've got one on your nightstand, and then I would have to put like one on my nightstand and the rest of them here at my desk to ensure that I get them in me. But the point is, putting what you need to be successful in this new habit that you want to develop, or this thing you want to do, or this endeavor you're taking on, stacking the cards in your favor so that you can actually have an easier time pulling it off. And that for me is one of the biggest elements of what you've done with Sleepy Time Club and the bedtime kits, is you've done the work for parents to have something at the ready, easy, engaging. And all you got to do as the parent is take a few deep cleansing breaths, let the day go, and connect with your kid. And you can have 20 minutes of really sweet connected time that will become their memory of bedtime, rather than go to bed. I told yeah. you to go to bed. Oh my God, if you don't stay in that bed, I'm going to staple you to it. Yeah, all the things that my kids heard me hollering. Yeah, it's just putting success in your way. If bedtime, and I would say it's a good idea, period, end of story. But if you are struggling with bedtime, this is a great way to get a grip on it and not only mitigate the struggle, but what is it was said on your website?
Stop the struggle, yeah, get the snuggle.
Stop the struggle, get the yeah. snuggle. Yeah.
And even if that snuggle is, you know, is two yeah. minutes, right? Better than nothing. Just like, and actually, I also created these cards, bedtime love cards, which give you sort of triple a triple whammy. So the cards give you that quiet, low supervision activity because they each have backings. You can color, you can set your child down, have them color the backs, then cut them out, you know, glue them on a piece of cardboard, cut them out, blah, blah, blah. But the other thing it gives you is if you have more than one child and they're, you know, like they have slightly different bedtimes because of their age, because that's like the most important thing we all need to know is that different ages require different amounts of sleep. You know, so if your kid is, and that sleep is the canary, if your kid is having trouble in school or with friends or with anything, check out the sleep time. You can print out as many copies as you want. Give it to your older child who goes to sleep later and say, while I'm tucking in, you know, Avery, you go pick out three activities and we're going to share that together. Now, three activities, we're talking about eight minutes. And the child is in charge of that. Like a lot of sleep experts recommend that if your child is resisting bedtime, have them pick a book from the bookshelf. Well, as like the town babysitter, that book can range from Let the Wild Rumpus Begin and A Pillow Fight Can Follow, or it can range for like The Velveteen Rabbit, which is like reading War and Peace, you know? So it's just like, okay, no, it's quality. We're going to spend time together. And it's the same with adults. We're all doing bedtime every single night. All of us. We have a bedtime routine. If your bedtime routine looked like mine was when I had insomnia, your bedtime would be drink some wine, more than one or two glasses because you deserve it. It's been a rough day, right? Poison myself and mess up my sleep. Watch stupid shows because I deserve it. It's been a rough day. Oh my gosh, it's 11:30. I've got to walk the dog before getting everybody up for work and school. I know, I'll dress in my dog walking. I mean, I keep sending myself messages that was like, your sleep is irrelevant. Your self-care is irrelevant. So as long as you're doing bedtime every night, make it really special, whether you're a child, whether you're caring for each other, whether it's just you. You know, it's a container that is built into our days for, you know, self-love and self-care. You know, whatever that means to you.
At those transitional times, going to sleep and when you waken up, I'll be honest, I am terrible with a bedtime routine. I am someone who, to use our phone batteries as an example, I go, 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 go. And I'm like, 2%. I have just enough left to get horizontal. You know, and I don't have a problem going to sleep because I run myself down to 1 or 2%. And when I hit the pillow, I'm out.
That's
but
great.
I do have a morning thing that I do now before I even open my eyes. As soon as I'm aware that I'm coming to consciousness, I have a little routine that I go through to set the tone for the day.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. Well, I learned it from my friend Landon Porter, creating who we want to become and be in this life, by which you create the life that you want to have lived. And it all starts when, you know, because most of us are reactive rather than acting through our day. We're reacting instead of deciding. And so one of the first things that we learned how to do was have an intentional boot up, what he calls a boot up process. Just like your computer, when you turn it on, it goes through a set of instructions to get up and be ready to do whatever it is you want to do with it. Well, we too can do that. You get to create your own set of instructions. So, you know, the control freak in you is mollified. None of us have had a knock it out of the park experience the first time, any of us. But if you keep at it and you pay attention and are self-aware and work on augmenting your self-awareness every day, paying more and more attention to what actually is going on with you in your head, in your heart, in your physical self, then you can tweak those instructions every morning. And it really has made a huge difference. I mean, I would say, and I'm almost afraid to say it out loud, such that the gods will hear and go, ah, well, we can't have that. But I actually can't remember the last time that I quote-unquote lost my shit over anything. And I have not been without my triggers this year at all. At all. Oh, that's a lie. I do remember it was in.
That's a huge accomplishment. March. Just like this, this whole notion of regulating emotions.
It is.
Like, why didn't anyone teach me that as a kid? You know, like, you know, why was I like, you know, like, what was it, 2019 before I even heard the phrase, you know? So it's, yeah. And that's part of it. And whatever, you know, like we started out and I said, whatever, you know, regulates you, you know, for me, walking, solitude, you know, whatever, you know, and that may shift, you know, and we can fold that into our days, you know, your morning Buddha. It's really important. And kids are, you know, I'm having this discussion with my adult child now, you know, they have a roommate that's driving them crazy. And rightfully so. And just is straightforward and then goes somewhere else to, like, you know, beat on a pillow with a tennis racket. We have a date the next time I see them to go to Stumpy's Hatchet House, which is a franchise where you get to throw axes. So we're going to just like, wah, wah, get it all out.
You know, that's another thing. And we've been talking about having and knowing people with ADD and ADHD. And certainly this is not limited to us with that, but physical exertion is one of the best emotional outlets we've got available to us. And yet so very few people consciously utilize it for that purpose. You know, like, you can manage a lot of yourself by, and if you want to be productive, you could go actually chop wood and make it, you know, a twofer that you actually have firewood at the end of the time. But I know that, like, my middle child, my younger son, he played football, and well, he started out with soccer in elementary school and middle school, and then switched to football in high school. And he's a flaming introvert like you and I, and he also tends to, as a result of that, bottle up his emotions. Like, he is such a, I call him my glass lake child, because there, his attitude and demeanor most of the time are calm, cool, collected, not a ripple in the water anywhere. But underneath that is a volcano of stuff. He used physical exertion to manage his emotions and still does. And I think, God, you know, of all the ways that you could choose to deal with
really
that,
smart.
That's pretty
and
darn
yeah,
smart.
Yeah, I think help. Healing is cumulative. It is not like, well, I've finished my 3 years of talk therapy and word. It's always something. And if you've been the victim of trauma or relational trauma, it's going to be a lifelong process. It's just like, oh, I got to clean that up again. Okay, I guess I do. So all those tools and techniques help. And again, sleep is the cornerstone. You know, when sleep goes right, everything goes right. You can do all that good stuff.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Katie Bowman. Highly recommend her to everyone. She's a biomechanist who's also very funny and very, you know, she deserves a MacArthur Genius Grant, but she talks about movement and how lack of movement is really screwing with us. We evolved to move. So, yeah.
I often forget to fire something up. I too miss the days of curling up on the couch with a good book. And I don't.
Yeah.
Choose to prioritize that these days because there's too much else vying for my time and attention. But audiobooks and podcasts and things, those I'm just now, I mean, it's hilarious. Here I am with a podcast of my own, and I don't actually listen to many podcasts, even my own. But it's changing, you know. It's not like I don't know the advantages, because yeah, duh, it's easy to see. But again, it's the how you move through your day and putting success in your way. Well, Brooke, I'll tell you what, I could talk to you all afternoon about this, but I want to respect your time.
Well, same here. And let's just make sure one of our next road trips, we meet each other in person.
I know, right? That would be awesome. And there are so many cool places between you and me.
That's right. That's right. I'm making a list right now.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. So I think I want to wrap this up with two last questions. And I want off the top of your head answers. Okay.
All right.
What's the best thing about being Brooke Packard?
I think it is being able to dwell in this kind of expansive universe that's always there. No matter what the reality is, there's another way to inhabit. That made no sense. Does that make any sense? It's like, I feel like I can go, there's a book I read every day, Celtic Things by Caitlin Matthews, and she talks about going in soul flight. Feel like that's so easy and so accessible. And that's like, you know, it's not escapism. It's just like, where can I fly to get some truth?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. And what's the thing, and this is probably not fair to make it off the top of your head last question, but I'm going to do it anyway. What's the thing you're most proud of so far in your life?
Oh, I would say my relationships, because we're always evolving and we're always working together. And I mean that with my child and my husband and my community and my family. It's just always it's a challenge that is worth meeting.
Amen. Amen. And I count myself very grateful to be one of those relationships you have.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
And I love these kinds of conversations, and I know you do too. Yeah. So anytime, I'll tell you, I'll make you this offer. Anytime you get twitchy and you need one, you holler and let me know and we'll do it again. And I'll do the same and we'll see who contacts who first.
Yeah. That sounds great. That sounds perfect.
Awesome. All right, my dear. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you're hell-bent on wringing every last drop of awesome out of this life and the time you have here, I invite you to visit SuzanneSaysPodcast.com for more conversations and to subscribe. If you'd like to be a guest and have a conversation, email me at letstalk@SuzanneSaysPodcast.com. Thanks for listening.